I'm Mark Raines. He's Jeff Brown, and Ryan Day is going to find a way to blow it with the best roster in college football. This is the Queen City Sports Podcast brought to you by Loveland Magazine. Let's go. Chris is gone again this week. So, again, you guys are blessed to have Jeff Brown back, and we'll get into it pretty quick with some Bengals talk. How you doing today, Jeff?
Go Chargers, right?
Definitely go Chargers. If we're watching it, it's 24-19. I'd never seen a that fair catch kick before. Have you seen that before?
No.
What a play.
I guess I knew it could happen, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I had heard of it, but I didn't even slip my mind that it could happen. So pretty cool. Hopefully that is the difference in the game here. We can get a Chargers win, because if the Chargers do win, and this is what I wanted to kind of get into first, things kind of open up a little bit where you think you have a shot. And for the Bengals, I mean, not a great shot because you still need to lose to KC. You still need to win and win out and have them lose to KC. But, stranger things have happened if you can get this one.
Stranger things have happened. It's certainly a lot easier path than if the Broncos win this game. If the Broncos win, the Bengals still have a chance, but it's a lot harder. We want the Chargers to win. Broncos, yeah, like you said, have to go to KC, I believe, play us, right? Don't
Yeah,
they?
that's the big thing. They play us. So, you Bengals have to win out anyways, and one of those wins could be against the
One of those
Chargers.
is, yeah. And then we
So,
got Steelers and Browns, both winnable games, I think. I mean, crazier things have happened.
yeah, not dead yet. Hoping for it. This could be an interesting game down the stretch. So hopefully they can pull it out. But the reason we're still in it is just another beautiful game, another win, another just well played, really good football game like we've seen the last 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. I think there were like 58 penalties. Devin Cochran, I mean, I know he was put in a tough spot, but geez, how many times did he jump off sides? And the Titans were doing the same thing, and the refs were calling a tight game as far as pass interference goes. That back judge or field judge, I don't know, whatever he was, but he had a rough game, man. I mean,
Yeah, both
he
ways.
both ways he called a terrible one on Cam, and then returned the favor and called another terrible one on former Bengal Awuzie on the pass to Chase Brown. So that kind of evened that out. But yeah, when that first penalty happens against Cam, and I was like, okay, here's going to be another game where we can't stop the Tennessee Titans, and it's gonna be a game in the high 30s that we're gonna find some way to lose. Luckily, they had a really strong second quarter to close out the half there. I think they went field goal, touchdown, touchdown to close the half out. Had a lot of turnovers, forced a lot of turnovers, and was able to get the ugly victory.
Well, that's the big thing. We really didn't stop them, like as far as like just moving the ball, but those turnovers really can swing a game, and they got the turnovers that week. And so even though they had a pretty good amount of yards against us, enough turnovers to win that game, and probably should have had more points, right? We had some left points left out there.
Jordan Battle, man. Like, oh my gosh, your first NFL touchdown. Like, you're an up and coming safety. You look like you're going to be a good player, and then you have a fumble fall in your lap, a nice return, and then what are you doing, man? Like, it reminds me of the Pats game when can't think of his name right now. Like our third tight end, the guy who fumbled the ball at the goal line.
I know exactly the play you're talking about, and he was like holding it out for no reason. And I can't think of his name either at the moment. It wasn't Trenton Irwin. It was, I
No,
can't.
is the tight end who Joe
Yeah.
Burrow loves, and he's had a pretty good year, but yeah, that was nuts. And just like, oh man, I felt for Jordan Battle, but it's like, why are you switching hands with the ball
Yeah.
right then and there? Like, why do you pick the 5 yard line to do that? But Tanner Hudson is who we're thinking of.
Tanner Hudson, good call.
Yeah, so
Everybody, when they see that, they always think of the DeSean Jackson, but wasn't that a TJ? Didn't TJ Houshmandzadeh do that in college first? I remember him doing that against Notre Dame in maybe the Fiesta Bowl or something like that.
And it happens too much. And this wasn't really like a showboaty thing, I don't think.
I
It
don't
was
either.
just a him changing hands.
Chargers just took the lead.
They sure did. Nice.
I hope everybody listened to this, got to see the Chargers win. We'll see what happens. But yeah, just took the lead.
So about the Bengals, I think they had four interceptions. I don't know exactly how many turnovers. But it's like, do we get excited about what we saw, or do we realize that it was Will Levis and Mason Rudolph? It's like, I don't know. I remember getting really excited after the Chiefs game about the secondary, about how they kind of shut down Mahomes a little bit, and then they generally been awful for most of the year. And this is another game where I'm not going to get too high just because of the quarterback play that was on the other side. And but you know it there was some good play, and then Geno Stone, who you were kind of hard on last podcast, he had the pick six. So I don't know.
It was definitely his
I'm
best
not
game. He seemed to be in better position. I mean, and again, I've been making this point all year. Like when they go against competent quarterbacks, they've been terrible. And when they go against bad quarterbacks, they've had their moments. And this is another example. They go against a bad quarterback, they have their moments. But it did seem like Geno Stone was in like better position generally. And maybe that's just the good quarterbacks know how to look the safeties away, right? They know how to like, we're gonna, if I want to go to this guy, I'm gonna be looking another way, and we'll get the safety leaning, and the quarterbacks that aren't as good don't get him out of position. But it did seem like he was more involved in the passing game, like more where he needed to be, and not just having kind of like the fluke plays where you get the pick six and you get a, sometimes those things happen even for bad players, but it felt like he was in a better position most of the game.
Agreed. And I feel like it was that way for a lot of defensive backs. But again, like you said, good quarterbacks know how to, recognize coverages and look off defensive backs. I think it's more just the quarterback play. But,
I
maybe
agree.
that's just me being pessimistic. I don't know.
I mean, I agree with you. That's the point I've been making all year, and they just need to be competent against the better quarterbacks. They don't have to be great because the better quarterbacks are going to get you more often than not. But they've been just terrible, letting Russell Wilson throw for 400 yards and that kind of thing. So was there anything you saw from this game that you take positively as far as the defense and the direction they're going?
I'm just gonna Reigns. I'm just gonna say no. Honestly, I'm no. Trey Hendrickson's still a one man show on the defensive front. Haven't really seen much from Osai or Miles Murphy. Like I said last podcast, that's what I need to see. Linebackers without Logan Wilson are mid. So I don't know. I'm not. I'm glad they won the game.
Yeah.
Still have playoff hopes. There's nothing really that I take away too positive that I'm super excited about from the defense.
And that's completely fair. I probably would agree with you on that. I keep hoping to like feel better about what we see, but I don't think we're ever going to feel better about the defense unless we see it against, a good offense or a decent offense, right? Will Levis just isn't it.
Yeah, I will say McKinley Jackson. He showed out a little bit. He was flying around a little bit. I liked what I saw from him. So if I had to pick a guy that was like, okay, a young guy who seemed to contribute, I'll go with McKinley Jackson.
Now, what about the offense? I Burrow, I thought had another really good game. He made a few mistakes. I think Burrow is kind of on that position where one, the offensive line is really struggling. I think I saw, I hate to like repeat Pro Football Focus numbers without like having them in front of me, but basically everything I saw was the tackles did a pretty good job all game, even with having a backup left tackle, and the
Not just a
guards.
backup. Not hold on. Just to be not even a backup. I mean, this guy's like fourth string, like way down in the basement of the depth chart. So,
And
you know,
he,
remember,
go
go
ahead.
ahead.
And he did fine, all things considered, from everything I've read, everything I've saw, and the way, and even watching the game. But the guards, again, were just getting crushed play after play.
Agreed. And I brought this up last time, is that Cordell Volson, we need to find a replacement for him. I prefer free agent experienced guys on the offensive line, especially interior offensive line, where I feel like communication is so important. But agreed. And look, I saw Matt Lee in the game, and a lot of people are high on him. You know, he's undersized. He was a seventh round pick. But he, I mean, a lot of people think that he's going to be an answer at center. And then maybe you can move Karras out to guard or something like that. So I don't know. But other than Matt Lee, we don't have anything on the existing roster that I'm too excited about.
Now, the interior line continues to be terrible, which is honestly what makes some of what Burrow's doing all the more incredible. And I know he's made a few mistakes. He has some fumbles. He had another one this game, which I thought was kind of a spectacular play by the Tennessee tackle, defensive tackle. I thought it was pretty awesome play. But I think a lot of that is just Burrow is having to do so much. He's constantly under duress, constantly improvising, stepping up, stepping back, moving away. Our goal line play this year is just Burrow buying 5 or 6 seconds, and then somebody finally coming open. It's absurd the stuff he's asked to do with this offensive line, and then he's doing it. And so when he makes a few mistakes like he did this game, I just don't even think anything of it. And I don't know if you feel the same way or not, but it's like I feel like it's inevitable with what he's having to do.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little higher on the overall offensive line play this year than you are. I think his sacks are way down. For as much as the offensive line struggled last Sunday, they only got to Burrow once. But you're right that a lot of that is Burrow, doing what he does. And so I think we can all agree that Burrow had one of his off games compared to how he's been playing for the last couple months. And how about this for an off game? 271 yards, three touchdowns, and a 95.7 quarterback rating. So I mean, he's just a guy who can overcome you know, that the poor offensive line play. And he's just, I mean, he does it week in and week out. He starts slow for whatever reason. We've touched on that before, but you know, that's a pretty nice off game to have.
Yeah, and there's an interesting thing I wanted to ask you about. And this is from the last game when they played Dallas, but Collinsworth mentioned something that is kind of popped into my head. And he said on third downs, Burrow is willing to take sacks, especially on third and long, because his feeling is if he can buy some time, they can pick up some of these third and longs that are usually hard to pick up. And if he's willing, the sack's only, a few yards and, 5, 10 yards, and then you just give him a little better field position. And it was something that struck me. And it's like from Collinsworth saying that, and I thought about it. It's like you see that all the time from Burrow, just that it's just kind of the little thing that he thinks about where he's like, if I can just buy this time and roll out and give these guys a little extra time to get open, we can pick up this third and 15 that you wouldn't normally pick up.
Yeah, and then also buying time increases the chances of a defensive penalty. And if guys are having to tackle Burrow in space, you have a higher risk of a personal foul, a face mask, which who knows if they call it. Of course, you got that Ravens game where there were three face masks happening at the same time, and none of them got called. So, but yeah, that there is definitely some truth to that.
So we have Burrow. He's pretty much on pace, I think, to break the single season passing record for the Bengals. I think he already has the touchdown record this year. And then we have Chase, who is looks like he's going to break their season record. He's pretty close. What are you thinking about those things?
So yeah, I want to touch on Ja'Marr Chase and the year he's having. And then I also, well, let me go here first. You could make an argument a decent argument. You can make an argument against this too, but you can make a decent argument that the Bengals have the two best offensive players in the league and the best defensive player in the league. And the fact that you could make that argument, and it's not a ridiculous one, and they're still 6-8, is just absurd to me. And obviously talking about Burrow, Chase, and Hendrickson, and Hendrickson still leads the NFL in sacks. But about Ja'Marr Chase, so a wide receiver has never won the MVP award. I believe only four have ever won Offensive Player of the Year. And it's just crazy to me in this game today, where it's all passing, that receivers don't get a lot of cred when it comes to year-end awards. And so it kind of got me thinking. So Ja'Marr Chase right now is on pace to finish the year. And I'm not going to get into the 17th game versus 16th game. Whatever. It is what it is. No asterisk. Just get over it. That's what it is. Anyway, he's on pace for 124 catches, 1,700 yards, and 18 touchdowns, which, looking at the best years a receiver has ever had in the history of football, that's right up there. And the only one that is probably clearly above, and this is gonna sting for Bengals fans, is probably 2021 Cooper Kupp, when he was gift wrapped a Super Bowl, when he had 145 yards, 1947, or 145 catches for 1947, 16 touchdowns. Other ones, you got Randy Moss in 2007, 98 for 1493 and 23 touchdowns. Devontae Adams in 2020 had 115 catches for almost 1400 yards, 18 touchdowns. So Ja'Marr Chase is on pace to go right in with these best years the receiver has ever had. And there is just no talk about him as an MVP candidate for sure, or even an Offensive Player of the Year candidate. And that's, look, I know Josh Allen is doing what he does, and Lamar Jackson, is having another great year, but it's like, where's Ja'Marr Chase? It's like, he is clearly the best receiver in the league. He's going to win the Triple Crown, barring injury, and no receiver is really particularly close to touching him in any of those three categories.
It's an interesting point, and it really goes to show, one, the point you're making about receivers just don't get enough credit in these kind of awards, these Offensive Player of the Year awards. But two, the other enormous thing is that the Bengals are 6-8, and it doesn't matter as great as he is, and I think it shouldn't matter, right? I think baseball's kind of started to get this right, that it shouldn't matter as much, because Chase and Burrow are not the reason the Bengals are 6-8. They're the reason they have six wins. They're the reason they've been in every game except the Philly game at the end. They're not the reason they've lost eight times. But he's having an insane season, and it really should be talked about more. And it's the only reason it's not is they're 6-8, and that they, for some reason, don't think about receivers in the same way as they do some other positions.
They're not, Chase isn't the reason they're 6-8. He's the reason they're not 2-12.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, this goes back to what we were talking about last week, is this guy's going to get paid. Bengals probably should have paid him before the season, because we were afraid this was going to happen. And again, we would take this at the beginning of the year. We're like, we'll take Ja'Marr Chase having a bang out year because it means we're going to the playoffs and contending for the Super Bowl. Well, only one of those things happened to be true.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about any of those things being true other than Chase. Yeah. But so there's another thing I want to get to, a little more lighthearted. Did you see Joe Burrow's Christmas presents for the offensive line today?
I didn't see that. Nope.
Apparently he got them all authentic samurai swords.
Oh my gosh. This guy's nuts.
Is
He,
nuts.
I mean, didn't he buy himself a Batmobile?
Yeah, so that's his big purchase this year. He bought himself a Batmobile, and he got his offensive line for Christmas authentic samurai swords.
Goodness gracious. I mean, he does a lot for charity. He's got the Joe Burrow Foundation, so he can do what he wants with his own money. But a damn Batmobile? I mean,
I don't mind it. I think it's kind of awesome.
yeah.
But I mean, I was thinking about one of the best gifts I ever got. I got a Diego Guevara bobblehead from you.
You sure did.
I don't know if it like broke in transit. I keep it in the box because like the head is separate from the rest of it. It's like broken. But
You did that on purpose, be honest.
I did not, but it is
You
still spectacular.
decapitated
It
him.
makes me laugh every time, and every time a UC fan brings up Diego Guevara, I have to tell people I have that.
Yeah, I got that from my buddy who actually went to UNCC around the time that that rivalry was so fierce. And so that was cool that, you know, he really had no attachment to it, but he gave it to me. And yeah, I'm glad you still have it.
Are there any other thoughts on the Bengals before we move on?
No, just go Chargers.
All right, so we get to move on this week to talk a little bit about the Crosstown Shootout. I know everyone's probably heard plenty of talk about it since then, but did you get to watch it?
Did I? I did, yes. And did I nail the final score?
You may have. I haven't gone back and listened. I know you were pretty close to the final score.
After that first podcast where I had three abysmal predictions, I think I almost nailed the final score. I might have said 68-64. So I was right there. So yeah.
I do want to also say though that first podcast, even though like your predictions weren't great, you were very high on the Washington offense going into that week.
I
And it
was, yeah. I'll take
and
that.
and
Yeah.
and and so I mean it was something I brought up the next week after we'd lost the game, was how high you were on the Washington offense, and it was something we talked about how difficult they would be to go against. So you didn't miss everything that week.
Okay. I appreciate that.
But yeah, so I mean, what a win. There was the Bearcats have been 0-10 in one possession or overtime games against Xavier since Huggins arrived 35 years prior. So they finally got a win in a one possession game. It probably shouldn't have been a one possession game at the end. But then again, they were down 7 with 7 minutes to go. So do you have any thoughts on the game? Anything you want to get before I kind of dig deep in it?
Just to say that I was super worried at halftime when, you know, the Cats were pretty much winning the entire first half until Xavier went on that run and Fremantle had 16 in the first half and hits that buzzer beater. I'm like, okay, here we go. But you know, UC regrouped, fell down by what was it, 7, I think you said.
Yeah.
And then you'll probably touch on this, but that last 25 seconds in Skillings, man, that rebound on the free throw was like it was like huge. And then I don't know why Fremantle got such a good look at the end of the game. That was terrifying. But the last 25 seconds was crazy. Skillings, you know, he had that offensive rebound, and then he had the play to tie it at 65. I don't remember how much time was left when that happened. And then Jizzle hitting the two clutch free throws. You know, what we talked about this last week is that if it comes down to free throws, you kind of favor Xavier a little bit, but Jizzle 63% on the year hits those two big ones. So great game. And you know, you were talking about how maybe the Bearcats haven't won a memorable shootout. Well, maybe that was the one.
Yeah, and here's kind of what happened is they just missed a lot of shots that got them behind. They're up 9 points with about 7 minutes left in the half. And then they scored 21 total points from that point on until they were down 7 with like 7:45 left. So basically a 20-minute stretch, they scored 21 points total. And the problem was they just were missing good shots. They missed some layups. They didn't score a single point the rest of the half after going up, or they did score points. They didn't make a single field goal the rest of the half after going up 9. They had 5 free throws over that stretch, but they missed. I think there were a couple layups they missed, a couple open threes they missed. And it was just one of those things where I thought they were getting good shots. And like, you know, Jizzle, I think, was getting to his spots, and he was o went 0 for 11 that game. And so they really had to battle. But what was there all game is I thought the defensive intensity and their length and athleticism gave Xavier a ton of trouble the entire game. And Fremantle was the exception in the first half. He was able to get some things going. And then kind of late in the game, Conwell was able to spring himself. I think Dan maybe got a little tired chasing him, and he was able to just get a little bit of room, and he hit some huge shots to keep him in it when it looked like UC was going to pull away late. So yeah, it was a huge win. And I think at one point in the game, CMOS, Jizzle, and Dan were like a combined 2 for 28 from the field. And then Seamoss had some huge plays to get him back in the lead, along with Dan had some huge finishes to get him back in the lead. Seamoss also had two awful things that would have they probably would have won a little more comfortably. He had took a terrible three. That was the only bad shot they really took in the last 7 minutes of the game. He took a terrible three that he shouldn't have taken, and then he missed the front end of a 1-1, which you don't expect from him. And when he had a chance to really stretch out the lead, so they had some opportunities to not make it quite so tight, but it got tight. Those the free throws from Jizzle were huge, and just as important, that inbounds play, they go to their worst free throw shooter, and he got rid of that ball as quickly as possible. It was really good recognition by Dylan Mitchell. Xavier did not even have time to think the foul as quickly as he got rid of the ball.
Right. Yeah, and it's just yeah. So some Bearcats struggled from the field, like you said, Jizzle. But it's crazy if you look at the final box, how close the game was. As far it's exact same amount of shots made, exact same amount of shots taken, by both teams. 3-point percentage was very close. Rebounds 37 to 36. Assists both 13. It was just it was a great game. It was close. It wasn't like some of these I feel like shootout games where it's just the outcome is just like you know what's going to happen at the end. This one was back and forth. It was close. Teams played neck and neck. It was a great game.
Yeah, and it was incredible for UC fans to get that kind of win. I know I'm kind of down on the Xavier team. I was going into the game, but they have guys. You know, they have guys that can. I just don't think they're that athletic, and I don't think they have that many creators. But they have some shooters, and it really stinks for them to have Fremantle go down. He was a load. He was the one top 100 guy by Evan Maya over the course of the season at that point. He was having a great season coming off injury, so I feel really bad for them about Fremantle because I do think they're going to struggle inside and they're going to have to just make a lot of shots if they're going to have any chance to have the kind of season I know they want to have over at Xavier. But big time win for UC, and things don't get any easier. I think Dayton is a lot better than Xavier, and UC's got to play them Friday night. Do you know anything about Dayton?
Well, they're the best team that UC's played all year. It's going to be their toughest game. Like you've just said, they're better than Xavier. And man, they've played, I don't know if you want to call it a gauntlet, but they've played some teams already this year, and they've won two of the games, and the two games they've lost against top 25 were super close. I think, I think they're going to give UC fits offensively. They're not super, they don't have a lot of size, but Cheeks, their leading scorer at 6'3", and somehow their leading rebounder at 6'3". I don't know how that works, but so they don't have the size advantage. But look, Dayton's tough. They've beaten some good opponents this year. Like I said, 14th offensively, defensively not so good. But they're, in my opinion, by far the best team that UC is gonna, or their best opponent thus far this year.
Thus far, they'll be their best opponent in the non-conference. And here's something that's great about them is they really have stepped up their offense with the competition level they've played. You know, they've had some down a couple down games against some of the lesser teams. They didn't shoot it that well against UNLV midweek this week, and it's kind of a game sandwiched between Marquette and Cincinnati. But they've played five teams in the KenPom top 56. Northwestern, they were 1.03 points per possession, which is average, but Northwestern's a really good defense. They were 1.15 points per possession against UNC. They were 1.22 points per possession against Iowa State. They were 1.31 points per possession when they routed UConn. They were 1.15 points per possession against Marquette. So they are scoring efficiently against the best teams on their schedule. So UC is going to have to bring it on defense. If they don't bring it on defense, they're going to be in trouble. The big thing that I want to see from UC this year is last year they played Dayton and they could not keep Dayton off the foul line. Dayton might have shot 40 free throws. I can't remember exactly. They shot a lot of free throws. Colby Elvis, who's not there anymore, Went to the line over and over and over again. They've got to stop that. They can't let Dayton score from the foul line. If they can prevent that, I think UC is pretty good at run. Again, they did this against Xavier. They're really good at running teams off the 3-point line with their length and the way they cover the 3-point line. And then UC's got some athletes that can protect the rim. Azeez had probably his best game as a Bearcat against Xavier. Dylan Mitchell's been just phenomenal all year. So I do like defensively what we can do against them if we can keep them off the foul line. I actually am a little more worried offensively than others might be. They're not a very good defensive team, but they play a really wonky style that will slow the game down a lot. They play a lot of matchup zone. They won't let UC get out in transition. So UC has got to be able to execute in the half court, which is not UC's best attribute. They've got some guys, but UC wants to be up and down. They want to be throwing lobs, and they can throw them in the half court sometime, but it's a little harder sometimes against the zone than it is when you're screening. Xavier, they crushed them in the half court with those lobs. I mean, they didn't score efficiently, but when they were scoring, it was like getting that lob to the rim and getting the dunk.
Yeah, and speaking of lobs to the rim, I know I'm going backwards here, but how about that first bucket of the game? Man, that was nuts. And I'm not sure if you were at the game or not, but the call on TV was awesome. So I just wanted to mention that since we're
Yeah,
talking about
caught a
lobs.
body. I was at the game, but
Yeah, caught a body.
I have watched it since.
Yeah.
And th yeah, that was a nice call. I really enjoyed it. So, I Dayton game. We're not gonna spend too much time on it. I think Dayton's got a lot of good guard play. I think their bigs are, good enough. They're athletic. They can give UC a lot of trouble. And the thing is, they shoot threes. They've shot them well. The last couple of years, Malachi Smith is 50% from three. Santos is 42% from three. Cheeks is 41% for three. Bennett is 38% from three. They're tough to guard on the perimeter. UC is going to have to be there and doing everything they can to get a win. I think they will. I have a lot of faith in this UC team, especially getting over the hump against Xavier. But Dayton's a better team. It's a tougher location. They're going to have to play better than they played against Xavier to get that win. So now, do you
Well,
have
hold on.
anything?
Let me give my
Go ahead.
prediction so I can nail it once again. And unfortunately, I'm not with you on this one. I think Dayton offensively is too going to be a little too much, like you mentioned, 3-point shooting. I'm going to say 72-63 Dayton. And the only reason I'm making a prediction is because if I'm right, I'm definitely going to bring this up again. But if I'm wrong, then we'll just forget about
All right, well, loop that around. It'll be 72-63 Cincinnati.
it. Okay.
All right. We got about 6.5 minutes left. Do you have any college football playoff thoughts as we come into the weekend? The first college football playoff. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is awesome that they're doing it this way. I love the 12 teams. We get to see teams that, Texas, Clemson, who, can argue is not very good. Tennessee, Penn State, all these teams wouldn't be in it. Notre Dame, Indiana, who lost one game all year, all these teams wouldn't be in it. And it's cool to at least give them a shot. So if I'm going to run down things very quickly here, I think the first weekend goes chalk, and I'm sure you're all in on the Vols, but that game's in Columbus. I like Ohio State. Texas is just better than Columbus or better than Clemson. Penn State, I think, is just better than SMU, and Notre Dame beats Indiana. And really, I'm not really crazy on Texas, I think, over Arizona State, probably. That's probably my only upset of the second round. I like Oregon over Ohio State, Boise State over
Texas
Penn
over
State.
Arizona State isn't an upset, though. I know the seeds have it that way, but
Yeah, okay. All right.
Texas will be
That's
favored
true.
by two touchdowns in that game.
Two touchdowns. Oh boy.
Two
I don't know about
touchdowns.
they'll be favored. That'll be interesting to see. It's a 5-4 matchup, and you're right. It's when I say upset, I'm talking about the seed, which is it's
Yeah.
not that that doesn't matter. Texas will be favored, so you're right there. Oregon will be favored. I think they win. I guess that brings up who's going to be favored if Penn State plays Boise State.
I think Penn State will be favored by about 10. I am a little more skeptical of Penn State in this environment, and I kind of like this SMU team. They had a slow start against Clemson, but I think they were a lot better than Clemson. They lost to BYU, but I watched that game. They were better than BYU. BYU caught every break in that game. And I was pulling for BYU because I'm a Big 12 guy, now that UC's in the Big 12. I actually like this SMU team a lot. And even though I think Penn State's a lot better, I don't trust Franklin in this situation. And so that's one I could see being an upset. And yeah, I know I think Ohio State will win. If I had to predict, I would take Ohio State because I think Ohio State's the most talented team in the country.
But
But
they have Ryan Day.
and I think t I and I'm not I think Tennessee's really good.
Oh,
And
they are.
touchdown Chargers. Gonna go up 10 with about 2:30 to go, everybody. We Bengals could be in this. Yeah, I think that Tennessee
And
team might be really good, and their defensive line is awesome, and Ohio State's offensive line has struggled. So it will be interesting to see because, is the SEC that much better? The top of the Big Ten seems really good, but I do think the like lesser the bottom mid of the Big Ten is a lot worse than the SEC. So it will be interesting to see what Tennessee can do in that game. I think it's going to be a big barometer game for how the playoffs are going to go. I if I had to predict, I would take Ohio State, but that I think that's the most intriguing matchup we have this weekend.
yeah, I mean, what do you think about Indiana Notre Dame? I mean,
I
Notre
love
Dame's a
this Notre
touchdown
Dame team.
favorite.
I think this Notre Dame team is really good, really talented. I know they had that weird Northern Illinois game early in the year, but I think they're really good. But at the same time, I love Signati. I think the guy is an absolute star in the making as a coach, but I think the talent at Notre Dame's too good. Now there could be some weather issues, and if there is some snow, maybe the coaching will come into it a little bit. Maybe Marcus won't be as good of a game manager. And honestly, I have a soft spot for Notre Dame now because I like Marcus Freeman and I love Mike Mickens, the former Bearcat corner who was here for the Kelly or for the D'Antonio and then Kelly era, early Kelly area when we went to two straight BCS bowls under Kelly. So a big Mike Mickens guy. So I would love to. I actually kind of like Notre Dame these days. I'd like to see Notre Dame do well.
The quote from the Indiana coach: "Google me, I win." That's just
What a
that's
ballsy
awesome.
coach before the season, and he has backed it up, hasn't he? I mean, that is, I love it. I love it. I love when guys do that and back it up, as long as they're not people I'm rooting against.
Yep, and then of course their quarterback from Ohio University. can't
Yeah,
can't forget that.
nice career at Ohio University, and then he comes here and does that. I mean, you knew how good Ohio was, and
I remember saying, like, why would you, if you're gonna go to the Big Ten, I get it, you want to get the exposure, but why would you go to Indiana? They stink. That was me about 12 months ago. But speaking of the Bobcats, they play tomorrow afternoon in their bowl game against Jacksonville State. So go Bobcats. They won the MAC as we talked about. Long time coming there. I was hoping they'd get to play in the Myrtle Beach Bowl like they did last year, and I was able to go, but this year they're a little farther south. They're in Orlando.
Did both those teams lose their coaches? I
Ohio
can't.
University. Oh, you did. Yeah, he went to UNC Charlotte. I don't get that.
That's a weird one. I can't. That's a steal for them. But Jacksonville State, I think that's where Rich Rod was. I can't remember for sure. But yeah, we got less than a minute to go, so we're gonna get out of here. Last thing I want to say, Joe Royer is committed back to coming back to UC one more year as a senior. So great job by the staff again this offseason retaining their key guys. Now they got to put it together and win something this year. Jeff, I really appreciate you coming and joining me again this week. Any last thoughts for everybody?
Nope, I covered it. It was the Bobcats tomorrow in their bowl game. So go Bobcats.
Go
Thanks, buddy.
Bobcats, go Bearcats, go Chargers. Now it's time for the Bengals to make the playoffs. We'll see everybody next week. Have a good one.